Welcome to part two of our interview with John Olson about growing up in a haunted house. You'd be wanting to look for answers as far as who is this little boy, especially when you come across the ghost of a child. I think a lot of us are like, how can I help you? What's going on? And sometimes it's not even really a child. It's something that's looking like a child.
Right.
When you were hearing these stories, were you able to do any sort of investigation to try and hone in on who this might be at all?
You know, I do try to look into it when I get a story, especially like this, and I've never been able to find the story of a lost child in that area. When you go back so far to the original pioneers that came across the plains and settled all of the West, there's a number of stories of children who have gone missing and they've never found, or who have died along the way. And it could be connected to something like that. I believe it could be connected to somebody who was either crossing the plains or somebody who was camping back in the day, whatever it was, and was lost. But I was never able to pinpoint one, who that child was, or I've never been able to figure out why originally that place, that canyon, is called Scare Canyon. So whether they're connected or not, I'm not sure. Could be, though.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, very, you know, very likely that's very much a possibility. Very creepy story, and obviously plays well into the title that it has of being Scare Canyon. You're also telling me earlier about a building on a campus that is extremely old and apparently houses quite a few ghosts, which many buildings on campuses seem to have their ghost stories. Let's hear about that one.
Yeah, so there's a building on the campus of Utah State University here in Cache Valley. It's called Old Main. It's actually one of, if not the oldest building on campus. And part of the reason that it's still there is because it's so old. They've refurbished it, fixed it. It was actually built in 1890 when the school was originally built. It was one of the first buildings. And it was used for classes and for administration. I also found that in 1919, it was used as a makeshift hospital during the Spanish flu that went through the United States with so many people that had died. They actually kept that as a hospital just for the Spanish flu people, and several of those people did die in there. I had an individual, her name was Tiffany. She came to me, and this was more recently that I gathered this story. She was actually worked there. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, and they always had a cleaning crew that would go in from 4 a.m. to about 8 a.m., cleaning the hallways, getting everything ready, fixing up whatever needed to. Maintenance worked with them, and she had that job on campus. She said that the first couple months were uneventful there. And then she started noticing things when she would clean rooms. She would come across cold spots, get really creepy feelings in some places. She asked some of the people that she said she had talked to, some of the people that had worked there a lot longer than her, about it. And most of them just smiled and said, well, you'll get to know the place. And she wasn't sure what that meant. But her first experience with a ghost there, she said she stepped off the elevator in the basement, and there's a long hallway that goes from the elevator over to some of the vending machines where they took their break. She stepped off the elevator and started walking, and walking towards her was a lady that was walking really fast, and she was in really old clothing. She was in she had a skirt, a gray blouse, it was really weird fabric. She had a long dark hair that was up in a braid, but she looked like she was really busy. She had an armful of books, and several strands of hair were pulled out of her hair like she was frantic in what she was doing. And she was walking down the hallway, and as she passed Tiffany, she nodded and said hello and then walked on. And she thought, that's really strange. Why would that person be up here? And as she turned, the person was gone already. The lady was gone already. And she asked one of her friends, she says, or one of the people she worked with, she said, I just saw this lady walk by. She was in a hurry. And the person kind of smiled and said, yeah, that's what we call the gray lady. She's here on the basement floor. She's always in a hurry wherever she's going. She's got a stack of books in her hand. And so she realized it was a ghost at that point. And she has seen her several times in the basement, always in a hurry, always with her hair kind of mussed a little bit like she was in a hurry. She always smiles when she passes you, sometimes even says hello. And several people had seen her. She said in the 4 or 5 years she worked there, she had seen her 2 or 3 times. And after she knew it was a ghost, she said she never felt frightened, super frightened by it. The first couple times she was, but then she kind of took it as somebody that was there working. And she kind of had an affinity for this lady of whoever she was. On the third floor, she said there was a little bit more of a, not necessarily malicious, but had a more of a dark feel to it. It was they called him the older gentleman. And on the third floor, you would be walking around cleaning, and there were several long hallways, and you would walk in the hallway. For example, she was working on, she closed the door to one room and walked into the hallway, and standing at the end of the hallway facing the opposite direction was an older gentleman, and he had an old suit on, very worn, gray hair, and standing facing away from her. And she looked, and she said, can I help you, sir? And he just stood there, and she took a couple steps towards him, and he hurried around the corner, which is where he was standing, and she hurried down there and looked, and he was gone. And she would see him on several occasions as well, always facing away from you, always near the corner so that he could make his way around the corner before you get to him, and always disappears after that. Those were the two apparitions that she saw, but there was oftentimes she would find books thrown on the floor and things moved, and there was quite a bit of activity in this old building, Old Main, on USU's campus.
When you have something like that on campus with a ghost story, with a building that's frequented by many people, how open are folks to talking about the paranormal there? I know it kind of varies from place to place as far as just how accepting the concept of ghosts are.
Mm-hmm. It's as I've interviewed lots of people, I found that, you know, there's a lot of people that will tell me their story, and then I have a section of those people who don't want their stories in the book. I have a larger section of people that say, yeah, you're welcome to put it in the book. Please change my name. I don't want people to find out that it's my story. Mm-hmm. But I find that because of, you know, shows like your show, because of shows on TV, because people are more open to talk about it, I'm getting more and more people who tell me their story, and then they're like, yeah, I'm perfectly fine if you leave my name in there. I'm okay with it. It just seems like the stories nowadays, people are a lot more open to telling and being okay with people knowing their stories. It seems to be more accepted, which is rather nice.
The stigma of it is getting less and less, which is good, because I think right. People are realizing that there's a whole world of people out there who also have shared experiences, and just how cathartic it can be to get them out. Get them out to other people and realize that they are not alone. Obviously, mm-hmm. you've been collecting a lot of stories. Tell me, of all the stories that you've gotten, give me one that has been shocking to you or disturbing. What of all of them, when you go to and you go, that I don't know that I could handle that if that happened to me, but something really like that's one of the most disturbing ones that I've heard. I know I have my list of mine from stories. What's yours?
Well, interesting enough, so as I've gathered stories from people, I've always been open up to not just ghost stories, but UFOs. I've got people who come to me with their UFO stories, Bigfoot stories, glitches, what I call glitches in the Matrix, things where things didn't make sense to them. It wasn't necessarily tied to a ghost or something, but made absolutely no sense. And one story that stands out to me, that it's one of my favorite, and honestly, it's so out there that I wouldn't have put it in my book if by interviewing this gentleman, I did not feel his fear when he is explaining it to me. So this gentleman, he moved to Cache Valley. He came to visit a friend in his 20s, and he was a big outdoorsman, fell in love with the valley, and just, he wasn't married, packed up and moved here. Found a job because he just wanted to hike and rock climb and fish, and this was the place for him. Well, he'd been here for several years, and a friend of his and he were going to go on a hike to a place. It's called Mount Naomi. It's one of the highest peaks here in the Cache National Forest. Now, it's not a real steep or hard hike, but it's just really high up, kind of a nice hike. Mm-hmm. But his friend at the last moment had canceled on him, so he decided, being in his 20s and being, you know, you can handle anything when you're in 20s. You think you're invincible. So he decided to go on his own. He got a late start, took his bedroll. There's a campground where you park near a place called Tony Grove, and he started hiking. And you gain quite a bit of elevation to the point where it's mostly trees and some shrubbery and rocks, but, you know, not a ton of shrubbery. And he had hiked up quite a ways, and it was getting dark, so he decided he was going to spend the night there. So he lays out his bedroll, and he'd just brought food to eat because it was in August, and a lot of times what happens here in August is there's a fire ban because it gets so dry. So he had just brought food to eat. He had had his dinner, and he always brought an old book with him and his headlamp so that he could sit in his bedroll and read his book. So he read in his book for a while, and then watched the stars until he fell asleep. And it's just so peaceful, he said. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, roughly, he gets woken up. And he's really confused because he says he's an extremely heavy sleeper and it takes quite a bit to wake him up. And he wakes up and he's not sure why he's woken up. He realizes it's really quiet. And so he's sitting there for a few minutes trying to go back to sleep. And all of a sudden, there's a whistle coming from his right. It's about 15, 20 feet away from him is this whistle. And he's like, well, birds don't sing at night. And this doesn't sound like a bird. So he gets up and he slips his boots on because he's getting really nervous about this whistle and about what's going on. It's so calm. The bugs aren't chirping, you know. And as he puts his boots on, he gets hit in the chest with a rock about the size of a quarter, he said. He said it wasn't hard, like somebody threw it at him hard, but just to get his attention almost. And at this point, he's really afraid. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been able to find his headlamp, and he's not sure what's going on. And he hears the whistle again, and at this point, he realizes that his headlamp is still on his head. So he flips the headlight on, and he shines it towards the right where this whistling is coming from. And he says he sees something that his brain cannot quite gather. But sitting on this pile of rocks about 15 feet away is a creature. He said if it was sitting on its haunches and if it was standing up, it would be maybe 4 feet tall, maybe 3.5, 4 feet tall. Its skin color was gray-green. It was bald with all of its features, like its nose and his ears were pointy, and his fingers very skinny with long fingers, very humanoid, but very strange. When he was explaining it to him, when I read it now, his explanation, it almost looks like a creature from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And he said it had old ragged clothes on, covering it, like old ragged pants and an old ragged shirt. and it's covering its eyes because he's shining the light directly at him, and it's close enough that it's covering its eyes. And he's obviously in shock staring at this thing. As he slowly starts to lower the light from its face, and as it pulls its hand down, he can see it has large black eyes and sharp teeth. And at this point, he said he notices it's got something in his left hand. It's trying to slide behind it. And he looks and he realizes that this creature has his book in his hand. It has his book. And he said, oddly enough, that's what snapped him out of it, is that he realized this creature was close enough to have stolen the book from him while he was asleep. Mm-hmm. He grabs his bedroll and his backpack and goes running for the trail. He says he's about 30 feet off the trail, and he trips just as he gets to the trail, and his stuff goes flying, and he just trying to gather up all of his stuff to get out of there. And when he does, he can start hearing the whistling coming from behind him again. And he was just freaked out, obviously. And he runs down the trail. Something that took him an hour to walk, he runs in like 15 minutes. He says he was never ran so fast in his life. Throws all his stuff in his vehicle and sits there and finally calms down enough to drive home. And as he's telling me this story, I remember the fear in his voice. He whatever it was he saw, he was convinced of it.
Sure.
Well, and oddly enough, you know, I looked into it after I got this from him, and I looked into it, and Native American lore have a creature. I always slaughter the name when I try and say it. It's called the Pakwaji.
Okay.
And a lot of Native American tribes have the same lore about this creature. These creatures that look just like what he explained, that live in the mountains, that steal things from them, that like to cause trouble, that like to lure children away. And I found that so interesting. He had no idea about the history or lore of the Native Americans, but it just really surprised me how their story matched up so much with his explanation of the creature he ran into.
I don't know if it would be a good thing or not if he had knowledge of that story when having that experience.
Right, exactly.
It could go one of two ways at that moment.
Yeah, exactly. I can't, even not having knowledge, I that one just gives me chills when I think about it. And listening to him tell me the story, it was just amazing. It was really a scary story.
That wraps up part two of our interview with John Olson about growing up in a haunted house. Thank you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something. But this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.